Welcome back to Happy Brain. My name is Sean Block. I am with Dr. Shannon Sarazawala. I'm so excited that you're here today to talk about personality. So I want to take advantage of your expertise and start with a little scenario and see if we can kind of go from there. So I'm in Los Angeles, and I live right near the end, the finish line of the Los Angeles Marathon, which we just had last week. So I'm walking out. I was just going to go for a walk, and I completely forgot, because the streets were kind of blocked off, that it was the time of year for the marathon. I go, oh my gosh, I completely forgot. So I walk down to, I'm actually almost at the finish line. And the way they do it, they do this big loop. So everybody hangs out at like mile 19. And then they do a loop and it comes back right at the finish. So it's like a really opportune spot. Tons of people, you know, with horns and excitement and all that you can imagine at a marathon. So I walk up there. And I started getting really, really sad. I was like, well, why am I so sad? I was like, first of all, I was like thinking to myself, I forgot about this marathon. How could I forget about it? It happens every year. I went a couple years ago and it started triggering like this, oh my God, maybe I'm losing my memory. Maybe like my life must be a mess. I can't even remember a big event like this, right? And so I'm starting to go downhill pretty quick, right? And then I'm like looking at all the running clubs and they're all excited and they're all fit and they're cheering with big signs. And I'm like, I'm not in a running club. I'm not participating in any big event right now. Oh my God, what's going on with my life? I'm must be introverted. I must not be doing stuff. And all of a sudden I'm like feeling alone and just like my whole life is a mess because I'm not in a running club or something. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, because to me, I went downhill for no reason. It's not true. I'm not a total alone. I do a lot of things, but my mind just went in these different directions really quickly. And, you know, and I kind of went from there. And so I kind of wanted to start from there and maybe talk about some of the personality traits or some of the things that I was experiencing that can be related to like mental health personality. I don't want to say deficits or, you know, issues or traits that aren't as helpful in, for mental health. Is that a good place to start?
Yeah, no. I think that's great, right? Like, and so I think the tendency to have kind of ruminative or negative thoughts, right, to experience negative emotions in response to stimuli in the environment, that's associated with the personality trait of neuroticism, right? So, and it basically just means like a biological tendency to be more emotionally sensitive. So neuroticism is on kind of a continuum, right? And so there's people on kind of the one end of the continuum where just like stuff gets under their skin a little bit easier. They tend to think more about things. They tend to take longer to calm down. And then there's folks on the other end that like nothing really seems to get under their skin. And I want to make it really clear that neither one of those extremes is better or worse than the other. I think we're predisposed to think that if you're highly neurotic, that that's like, you know, the bad side, but not necessarily, right? So, you know, I've had, you know, friends talk about how their wives think they're really invalidating because they don't get upset when like injustices happen, you know, because they don't really feel that strongly. On the other hand, like I am definitely more on the neurotic side of the continuum. I feel my emotions really strongly. And I think that makes me a better mental health provider. It makes me more empathetic. So I do want to make it clear that like, it's not, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. What ends up happening to that tendency to experience negative emotions is a lot of times, people don't like the feeling of sadness, of anxiety, of guilt, of anger. They don't like those feelings very much. And so they develop these like mental habits, which are basically thoughts, bad attitudes about their emotions, right? Mm. I hate this feeling. Get this feeling away from me. It's so uncomfortable. It's weak to feel this way. Like everyone else is going to think I'm like a total loser because I'm freaking out about this, right? All of those negative thoughts. And that gets us to start avoiding, to do things to dampen those negative emotions. So a lot of times people will, you know, like, maybe in your case with the marathon example, kind of be like, well, let me just go home and take a nap, you know, or let me, I don't know, like, I mean, maybe not you, but like other people, I'll have a beer and I'll just like take the edge off, or I'll, let me just call a friend and get like reassurance. Like, I have stuff in my life, right? And all of those things make us feel better in the short term, you know, which is why we do them, because we're really trying to get rid of those emotions right now. But the problem is that, like, when we don't kind of process what those emotions are telling us, they come back more frequently and more intensely. So it kind of maintains that tendency to experience negative emotions.
So Shannon, can I jump in for a second on that? So if at that moment would have been better for me was just to say, okay, you're kind of feeling alone right now. Understandable. Yeah. There's a lot of people going on. There's a lot of fun stuff, but I've done fun stuff too. I'm just not doing something right now.
Yeah.
So should I just felt that that would have been better than like going down that rabbit hole of my life's a mess?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And like emotions serve really adaptive purposes in our lives. And so it is, you know, valuable to listen to what those messages are trying to tell us. And so on the one hand, sometimes our sort of first emotional reactions are more like habits. Like when we see other people having fun, we've like trained ourselves to think that like I'm missing out, you know? And so what you're describing, like kind of that, a cognitive restructuring sort of tool where you're like, I have friends, I have activities, I'm not a marathon runner, it's fine, right? Like that, you know, is certainly one route to sort of like, oh, this is a false alarm. Like I'm trained myself to have FOMO kind of thoughts, but like, let me actually like take stock of reality. That's one approach. The other approach is like, yeah, just moving through the feelings and asking yourself, like, what is this feeling trying to tell me? Because in some cases, people might have kind of I'm feeling kind of lonely, I'm seeing that, and I'm feeling longing, and I'm feeling nostalgia, and I'm feeling sad. And I think like sadness, most people don't like to feel sad, understandably. Mm-hmm. I think that sadness is a really important communicator. It lets us know. So people often feel sad after a loss, right? And a lot of times we think that a loss is like, you know, death in the family. But loss can be like more broadly interpreted. It could be losing a job. It could be having a breakup. It could be, and this is where I think it gets real broad. It could be kind of coming to terms with the fact that your life might not be exactly how you imagined it would be. It's like sort of failure to measure up to where you want to be.
Yeah,
that's
for
loss.
Sure.
That's grief. And if you ignore that emotion, you're not going to solve the problem. Like the purpose is to like process and to reflect and then to be like, okay, what can I do differently to move my life in a different direction?
So,
and you lose the information if you just try to push it away.
Got it. So being neurotic or neuroticism, that's just a personality trait. But is that like set in stone? Is that can you improve that quality, so that trait, so that you're not, next time you're at a marathon and seeing all these people, you react different? Like you mentioned that there's an extreme, there's on the far end where they don't care. Maybe can you get your nudge yourself more towards the middle, so you're not as either extreme on either side? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. So for a long time, I co-developed a treatment called the Unified Protocol, and that literally is a treatment for neuroticism. It's a cognitive behavioral therapy approach. And the idea, you know, if neuroticism is maintained by like, I feel something, I don't like it, I avoid it, and then the emotion comes back twofold, right? The way to get less neurotic, the way to feel fewer negative emotions is to welcome the ones that you are having. It's this really counterintuitive thing where it's like the more you struggle against it, the more interfering, the more you sink, right? Like the more you just like, you know, emotions are normal. It's okay to feel this. I'm going to feel through this. The less interfering they become, the less you avoid, the less you get those rebound effects that bring back more emotions. And if you can kind of maintain that pattern over time, like when you think about what personality is, it's like a label or a summary of how we think and how we behave. And when we take a personality test online, we're basically filling out questions that are like, do you usually feel sad? You know, do you overthink things? Those are the kind of neuroticism questions. And if you can maintain some of those changes over time, right, you're going to answer those questions differently. You might not go from like, are you a worrier? Strongly agree. To are you a worrier? Strongly disagree. But like you could move to agree. You could move to neutral. And that's a difference.
Do those inventory, there's, first of all, there's ridiculous ones on the internet where what, you know, 80s rock star are you, right? Mm-hmm. What, you know, Star Wars character, what Barbie character are you, right? And does it, the question I have is, when you take those, is it feeding into your own, what are preconceived notions of who you are anyway? So is it reinforcing, like for example, I'm kind of introverted, or I think I'm introverted. So every time I answer those questions, I go from the scope of I'm introverted, and then it tells me I'm introverted. So does it self-reinforce? I mean, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, I think these tests and personality tests in general are like really face valid. And what I mean by that is that the questions ask exactly what they're asking. It's very clear. And that can be okay, right? Because, you know, there's nothing magic about a personality test. It can only just kind of summarize the information that you're giving it. And so, yeah, like if you I think you can kind of like dig yourself into an identity hole. I'm introverted. I don't like that. You know, I couldn't possibly, right? And then that's, of course, going to shape the behaviors that you engage in. The example I always give is with like conscientiousness or dependability, right? Like, oh, I just couldn't possibly start that assignment, you know, early because I need the adrenaline of the last minute to get it done. Or I couldn't stop. I just can't start packing before a move because I just don't have the adrenaline to do it. Right. Those are thoughts. Those are identity thoughts. Right. And those, of course, like translate to what we do. If you're telling yourself, no, I couldn't possibly, then you won't. So I think personality tests, like I said, there's face valid and there's nothing like magical that it's going to spit out that like you don't already know about yourself because you're kind of putting in the information. I mean, it's worth mentioning probably at this point that like a lot of the personality tests that you can take online are not really evidence-based. So obviously like the BuzzFeed quizzes, not evidence-based. And I don't think people really think that like what Taylor Swift song are you is really getting at the heart of like who you are. But tests like the Myers-Briggs or the Enneagram, like people do take a lot of stock in those. Myers-Briggs is used by corporations to like funnel people into like work roles. And like I said, it's really face valid. So the like letters that you get or like the labels that you get sound really good. I mean, mine is protagonist and I'm like, yes, checks out 100%. but there hasn't really been a ton of research supporting like on them at all. And the little research that does exist suggests that they don't really predict career success, which is like their kind of like your one job. So my whole thing is that like, we shouldn't like get stuck in a personality type box. We shouldn't like typecast ourselves because personality is malleable. Right. And if you, like you said, like if you just keep telling yourself, well, I'm introverted, so I just couldn't possibly, well, then you won't, right? And you won't get to reap those benefits of change over time.
Well, let's circle this back to like mental health traits, personality traits, because kind of what we want to focus on is what are the things that I can improve, the tips and techniques that I can improve to be more, less neurotic? What are some of the healthier, what are some of the labels of healthier personality traits, if you're going to go there, that we should kind of work towards in mental health?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so yes, generally being less neurotic, right? Less likely to experience negative emotions, being less reactive to triggers in the environment. That's going to be useful for most people, right? If you are more on the reactive side of things, right? And the main tips for that are to notice what you're thinking, not necessarily get too bogged down in those thoughts, right? Like notice, a lot of times people get into these mental habit ruts where like, I'm a loser, I couldn't possibly, right? Like notice that and notice that that's how minds work and then try to challenge some of those self-limiting beliefs. But I think the biggest one with neuroticism is behavioral, right? And it's avoidance. It's like the key thing. And so it makes a lot of sense when you're feeling negative emotions. Like the whole purpose of negative emotions is to tell you that something is not cool in your environment and you should do something about it. So like I'm feeling anxious because I have a test coming up. And so the anxiety is like, yo, study. But a lot of times our behaviors become more about avoiding the anxiety than they are about like dealing with why the anxiety came up in the first place. And that's where you see things like procrastination, where it's like, obviously that like deals with the anxiety in the short term, because when you're watching Netflix, you're not noticing or paying attention to that anxiety. But it certainly screws you long term when, you know, it's the night before the test, then you're really anxious.
So what I'm hearing is two things. And getting back to this marathon experience analogy. So there's two things. One going on, like, okay, first of all, it's okay to feel when you get there and you're like, everybody's having a good time and you're feeling lonely. Like, maybe that's telling you, hey, I need to connect more. I need to do more. Like, that's probably a good thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing I'm hearing is, you know, I've done a little bit of CBT myself with professionals like yourself. And so the second part is kind of like not believing everything that's happening. Like, don't go down the rabbit hole of, oh, because I'm not connecting with these people right now, that doesn't mean I'm never going to connect and my life is going to be completely fall apart. That's not true. And it's proven not true. I've done events. I've done cycling events. I've done big events and things. So it's not letting yourself go down the rabbit hole. That's really interesting to kind of have kind of that two-pronged effect. Am I hearing that? Is that right?
You're describing like the two prongs of cognitive behavioral therapy, right? There's the cognitive piece that's like, okay, so I'm having this thought, like, what's the evidence for this thought actually? Right? And like, for you, the evidence is, well, actually, I've done similar things in the past. Yes, I'm not doing this exact thing right now, but like, this doesn't, just because I'm not connecting with anybody here doesn't mean I won't. And then there's the behavioral piece, which is like, let me take in the fact that I'm feeling lonely. And maybe, you know, even though I have done these things in the past, maybe I have gotten a little disconnected from people in my life. And this is my like kind of reminder, like, why don't I make plans? Why don't I reconnect with some people and like do that instead of, you know, distract yourself.
Now, as an international expert on this, so you've done all these major studies, and just real quickly, I'm curious, because you've said that there's science-backed tips. These are things that actually can nudge your personality in that direction. These are proven, right? You're not just saying these things. You've done massive studies specifically on CBT as a technique, right? Did I read about that? Yeah.
Personality change, right? So I have a study that came out, I think in like 2021, looking at the unified protocol, that CBT treatment that I mentioned, and its effects on neuroticism. And we see like large pre to post effects, and relative to a wait list, I mean, really big difference. And we see those effects they're maintained kind of 6 months after treatment as well. So you really are making long-term changes to your tendency to experience negative emotions. And that's beyond, you know, obviously when you have an anxiety disorder, which were the folks in the study, you're experiencing negative emotions, but these changes in personality were beyond or over and above like treating the symptoms of anxiety.
That's great. So what we're coming away with today is that if you can change your personality, it is malleable. It's malleable, correct? Mm-hmm. Is that the right word? It can change over time. It's not set in stone. So if I keep telling myself that I'm an introvert, I like to be alone all the time, and maybe that's not true all the time. So it doesn't have to be that way. And I can work towards, you know, improving that so that I nudge myself. I like the word nudge, and you use that several times, right? To nudge yourself. You're not going to go from extremely, you know, emotional to not emotional. I mean, you're trying to find like some place in between.
You probably wouldn't want to, honestly.
No, I like being emotional, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything else that, as we kind of wrap up and all the work that you do, that you kind of wanted to share with us that would help our mental health?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the one thing that I will sort of like caveat in here is just to kind of reiterate that there is no like ideal level of any trait. It really like, and so whether or not you decide that like you want to nudge your personality in a particular direction is totally like determined by your goals and values, right? So like if you are introverted and like that suits you just fine and like you don't have like professional or personal goals that are sort of compromised by having trouble, you know, kind of like putting yourself out there socially, then like don't go through the like difficult and stepping out of your comfort zone steps to change your personality, because why, right? But if you are a person that sees yourself in a different role or wishes you could be in a different role and say to yourself, well, I couldn't possibly do that because of X, because I'm not X enough, right? That you, that there is malleability there.
That's great. So, you know, if I want to get into a leadership role at my company or whatever, and I need to be a little bit more on the extroverted side, that I can work towards that. I can nudge myself in that direction. But if I'm perfectly happy doing what I'm doing and I don't need to make any real changes, there's no need to. What you're saying is it's there if you want to adjust and tweak things, but there's no need to.
Exactly.
There's no need to.
Now I want experts to at me like that I'm saying it's better to be extroverted because I swear I'm not.
And I want to recommend, like, I took a look at your website and the link is right there in the show notes. And you write a lot about these different values and goals and all these different things. I know you write for Psychology Today a lot. Mm-hmm. And you also are on a lot of podcasts. That if you want to get more in depth, you've linked some of your podcasts where you might go really into the scientific stuff, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some of that as well. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure. And I got to tweak a little personality things, but not major changes.
Fair enough. Well, thank you. It was great to be here and I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Happy Brain. If you enjoyed this, make sure you hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you have an extra second, leave us an honest review over on iTunes or your Apple podcasting app. And until next time, my friends, keep that brain of yours happy.